You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We are starting the countdown here. Just about less than, if you go by the hours, 1 week away from opening day here. It'll be even less than that by the time you guys hear this. So as you have probably noticed, I am not Troy Olson for the second week in a row to start out the show here. Troy has some family things he's taking care of. So I'm hosting. I'm Jeff. And of course, I'm joined by the ever incomparable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm pretty good. I don't think anybody wants to be compared to me, frankly. Let's be real here.
I mean, I didn't say why you were incomparable.
It's true. It's true. You did leave that out. So, you know. Left the out.
So we, as spring training's kind of winding down here, we're moving towards today as we're recording. It's March 24th. So we're exactly a week away from opening day. And it's going to be there are still, actually, considering where the Royals want to be, there are still some pretty big questions to be answered, and we're going to get to the bigger ones, or at least the biggest one in my mind, dealing with some infield situation in the second segment. But first, we want to start with, I don't know if you call it the biggest news. There's not really any huge news at this point in time unless there's some acquisitions. But if you want to call it the biggest news, Danny Duffy was optioned to AAA Omaha. And, you know, knowing Danny Duffy like we do on this show, Troy's has a little bit of a personal relationship with him. And, you know, we've had him on the show before. And he, knowing what we know of him and how amped up he gets for all this stuff, you have to know he was just crushed by that news. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he wasn't able to start the season with the team, but, you know, in the same regards, you know, it's this kind of thing always makes me think of Joe Dirt. I don't know if you've seen this movie, but one of the things that they keep different people quote throughout the movie is you know, this is a business that ain't UNICEF. So yeah, that similar philosophy plays into this situation. You know, it is more or less a meritocracy in Major League Baseball. The Royals have proven different at times, but point being, he played his way out of the fifth starter role, and a one Mr. Yordano Ventura extremely played his way into the fifth starter role. So, you know, not only was it a situation where, you know, Duffy did perform poorly enough to warrant a trip to Omaha, but Ventura stepped up, and you know what? I mean, that's refreshing. Like, mm-hmm. As much as it's unfortunate for Danny Duffy, how many times have we been in a situation where in spring training some pitcher is just getting railed game after game and just doesn't have it, but it doesn't matter because the Royals don't have any better option and nobody steps up. You know, we're like, oh, maybe this young guy will step up. Nope. And we have to start the season with, you know, Wade Davis in the rotation spot, or, you know, Luke Hochaver when he was a starter and just getting shelled all the time. So it's actually kind of nice to, you know, again, you know, we want the best for Duffy, and, you know, not just from a personal standpoint, but just from an organization. You know, he needs to succeed for this organization to take that next step. But it is nice that since he didn't, to have somebody like a Ventura who can step up and actually perform. So to recap, that leaves us with, and I'm going to try and put this in what I think will be the order here. I think they're going to go Shields is your number one starter, probably. Vargas is the number two, Ventura is the number three, Guthrie is the four, and then Chen is the five. Mike, do you agree to that, or would you switch that around a little bit?
I think at least the top three is pretty much for sure what they're going to go with, and they've been setting it up throughout spring with Chen following Guthrie. So I think that's going to be the right order, and I think it's a good idea to do it that way. Good reason that they gave, which makes complete sense. Hence the Royals and pitching, and it made sense. So
weird. You know,
mark that down.
Yes.
But you've got Shields, who, you know, good hard thrower, best pitcher, one of the best pitchers in the division, even in the American League. Jason Vargas, who has pitched well, but they basically did sign him to eat up 200 innings behind Shields. But they're two totally different pitchers. I mean, you've got a righty, then a lefty. Shields throws hard. Vargas really doesn't. And then you follow that up with Ventura, who obviously throws hard, who has, you know, good secondary stuff and has pitched lights out. He's probably the biggest name of the spring as far as prospects, because he's a guy, like you said, he won that job. And it doesn't happen that often with the Royals that, you know, those guys come out and they just win that job right out of spring. And, you know, then you followed up with Guthrie, who's not a strikeout guy, still throws pretty hard, but, you know, he's kind of like a hard-throwing finesse pitcher in a way. And you finish it up with Chen. So they really didn't want to have this lineup of Vargas, Guthrie, Chen, these guys who are pitch-to-contact guys, and a couple of them throw a little softer, you know, because you can end up with a series. Let's say you go to Detroit and your three pitchers line up as Vargas, Guthrie, Chen. I mean, that's you're basically giving a lot of the same looks, you know, two lefties who don't throw that hard and a guy who doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. So you break it up with Ventura, who, you know, documented 100 plus mile an hour guy. His curveballs look incredible. A week ago today, he was pitching against the Rangers, and that was his six inning game, or his six inning start, where he was just filthy. Like, he looked incredible. Like, he looked great. He got hit around his following start, but really, you know, 20 innings, 1.77 ERA, he claimed that job, and he was a front runner anyway. So I think that's the right way to go with the rotation, just to break it up, give teams a you know, different look. They're going to go, and, you know, that first series, you get Shields and Ventura in there. So even though Ventura is named as the fifth starter, he's really going to be acting kind of as the number three, kind of with the way it has to shake out. So I think that's the smart way to go for the Royals to start the year. And then, you know, we'll see if Duffy can work his way back in. He's really, really had a bad spring, though. So a lot of things to, you know, to still work on. He's going to do that at Omaha. So we'll have to see how he adjusts to that. And, you know, I think the idea is still he'll be back up. But, whew, you know, he was hit around a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, that Bruce Chen, you know, he had a great year last year. I think he was, if not a two-war player, he was close to it. But considering that, you know, he had a rough start to the season and kind of he came out of the bullpen and everything, but ultimately his success came from the fact that he didn't have to start an entire season. So he was kind of fresh at the end because he started the season as a starter. You know, then he came off and he went to the bullpen, and then he came back, you know, when they needed him, and really was able to kind of turn it on and kind of get them through that big stretch where they had to, you know, they won all those games and they had to compete. So, you know, if with Bruce Chen starting, he's not going to finish the season, and he might need a break close to, you know, after a couple months. So, you know, Duffy's going to have his chance. So that's one of those things where I was saying earlier how you just from what we know, he was probably crushed. But it's one of those things where you as a player, you got to pick yourself back up and you got to be able to say, OK, you know, this isn't over. My career's not over. You know, I know I can pitch in the major leagues. I've done it. I've done it to very limited success, but I've done it. So need to kind of take that momentum and say, use it as kind of a reality check, a calming period, say, okay, I just need to go down to AAA, I need to focus on doing what I do, and I need to get back on track, and then when they need me, I'm going to be ready to go, and I'm going to come up here, and I'm going to bust on the scene, and then I'm never going back to AAA. You know, I'm never looking back. You know, that's got to be the way that you look at it. We know kind of Duffy can get inside his own head sometimes, and so you hope that that doesn't happen again, but you also hope that, you know, as cerebral of a guy as he is, that he's able to have that kind of self-awareness and say, okay, this is what I need to work on. I'm going to focus on that. I'm going to work on it, and I'll be back. You know, so that's kind of the goal, and I think that's what the Royals, and And I think the Royals are also showing some faith in Duffy that he can handle that and then he can go back, because they're, you know, like take Moustakas last year, for example. You know, he probably should have been sent down to AAA, mm-hmm. and he wasn't. And I don't wonder how much of that is the Royals thinking that he might not be able to handle it. You know, so, and that does, I mean, on some level you should say, okay, you're a professional, you know, this is the way it goes, you're new coming in, you have to be able to handle it or you don't, you know, but it's not quite that simple. So yeah. It does factor in. And I do think the Royals are kind of showing a little bit of faith in Duffy's mental capacity to be able to say, okay, we can handle this move and he's going to be back. Because, I mean, they know he's going to be back and they're planning on him being back and being a part of this team's future. So, I mean, from what you know, Mike, I mean, you think he's going to be able to handle this, or do you think it's going to be something where, you know, now it's all of a sudden a long shot for him to come back? I mean, what are your thoughts on that whole scenario?
Well, I mean, with Duffy, and, you know, we know this from what Dave Lesky found out down in spring training, that he went to the Royals and was like, look, if the best place for me is the bullpen, I will definitely do the bullpen. And I think he did want to just break big league camp and stay with the team and be up there for opening day, but you know, it's performance, and, you know, you can't really justify the performance that he's had. And so I think he's mature enough to know that. So it's difficult to kind of take a guy who you do see as part of the plan and you really want to see him, you know, get, you know, some kind of momentum. And I think that was kind of the idea behind why they might put him in the bullpen. And there was some talk for a few days that almost seemed like he was a shoe-in, like they were looking for a reason not to, and ultimately he did kind of give them that reason not to. But, you know, they wanted him to go out there and get major league hitters out as kind of a means of inspiring some confidence in him. But I think ultimately having him in Omaha able to work as a starter is best for him. It's best for the Royals, because he's a guy who can give you 170, 180 innings. And if he can just be league average, that's going to have some value at the back of a rotation. And we know with the kind of stuff that he has, you know, mid to upper 90s fastball, pretty decent changeup, and he's working on the slider. You know, that's a repertoire that can really do well at the major league level, and it's coming from the left-hand side. So, you know, there's some upside there. I don't think you can see him as a number two guy. I think number three guy is probably as good as he can be, just because, you know, he has had some of those issues with walks, and this spring he's been hit out of the park a bunch. It's Arizona, so that's gonna happen. But he's also given up a lot of hits in very few innings, so, you know, there's a lot of stuff he still has to work on. And if that means he goes to Omaha and buzzes people apart, hey, you know, maybe that gives him some confidence that he can go do it. He makes it back to the big leagues in mid-June, and, you know, he's ready to go. You know, but we have seen that he does get kind of amped up. And so that's something that he has to be aware of. You know, whatever works for him, you know, I think he needs to really find whatever it is and just make it work. Because he's going to be important. I mean, we don't think that Bruce Chen's going to make 33 starts this year, so that's going to have to come from somebody, and Duffy's the best option for that. Next up is probably Chris Dwyer, and so, you know, keeping him in Omaha, able to start, that makes him somebody who's available if there is an injury, that he can jump up. You know, otherwise you would be relying on Dwyer, who I think is less reliable, and even though, you know, Duffy has had some struggles, you know, Dwyer's even less proven. So we've at least seen some upside from Duffy. Dwyer hasn't done a whole lot. So, you know, you give your team the best option to kind of come up and spell some guys if you need to cover a 15-day DL, if you need to cover three starts or something. And then, you know, he's still got the option. It's an option year, so he can go back to Omaha if necessary after that, or if it's a longer-term injury. You know, so having him as a starter gives them a lot more flexibility. And they still have the option, if they want to use him as a reliever, to try that if other things are going well. So, you know, rather than having to, you know, take him from the bullpen, take some time to stretch him back out, now they can at least, you know, go from a longer outing as a starter in Omaha. And if they do need him as a reliever, it's a lot easier to go from being a starter to a reliever than the other way around. So they kind of give themselves some flexibility there. as well. So I think that, you know, gives him an opportunity to work his way back up.
Yeah, and part of this decision too is not only do they now have the rotation set, but basically the whole pitching staff is set with the bullpen as well. It looks like the Royals are going to carry 12 pitchers, which is 7 primary bullpen arms, which will include obviously Greg Holland, Kelvin Herrera, Tim Collins, Lewis Coleman, Aaron Crow, Wade Davis, and then finally Francisco Bueno, who he's kind of the last slot, and they won't commit to him actually, you know, in terms of saying who's on the roster. They won't commit to him being in the bullpen, but they will say they basically said it. And from what I can gather, they're active. I don't know if I'd say actively, but they are looking to see if there's something better out there. So that spot is not exactly solidified right now. But obviously, if the season started today, they would go in with Bueno as that last spot, and they probably wouldn't feel too bad about it, especially with everybody else they got in that bullpen. I mean, you look at Greg Holland, Kelvin Herrera, Lewis Coleman, Aaron Crow. I mean, these guys are all just, you know, strikeout machines. There's going to be a lot of bullpen depth, and like you said, if they do have bullpen issues, then they can call up somebody like Duffy to be in the bullpen, or Chris Dwyer, or somebody. So they've got some room there. But the big question with the bullpen, though, has got to be, I mean, last year was a near historic year, and in terms of bullpen productivity. So the question is, can they replicate it? I mean, you know, Greg Holland having an all-star year, and just, I mean, all those saves and just the sheer amount of, I mean, all his strikeouts in there. I mean, he was a legit top five reliever last year, and without a doubt. I mean, people were talking with him in the same breath as Craig Kimbrell, and I mean, that's impressive in and of itself. And it wasn't just hype, you know. It was legit. You went down across the board and you looked at all those numbers, and it was a legit comparison. And then, you know, Kelvin Herrera had his struggles, but if you go back and look at his numbers, I mean, he was still pretty darn good. And there are a ton of teams out there, like probably all of them, that would take Kelvin Herrera and would throw him as a starting spot, or as a, I say starting, but like, you know, start the season with him in their bullpen, would not feel bad. They'd actually feel pretty good about it. And then, I mean, Lewis Coleman was dominant last year, and he hardly saw the mound because there wasn't enough room. So I mean, what are your thoughts, Mike, on whether or not we think this bullpen can come up and replicate, or at least come pretty close to what they did last year?
Well, losing Lou Kochaver really hurts because he was so good last year, to the surprise of many. And that's,
it still feels weird. I'm sorry, it still feels weird.
I know it doesn't seem right. It's I think some strange demonic clouds are opening above me for admitting that. It's very strange. But, I mean, you couldn't have expected Kochaver to repeat that. I don't think you can really expect Holland to repeat what he did, because he was just so good. I mean, it's a weird analogy, but I remember back in, you know, the old fantasy football magazine days, they would, you know, there's the myth of the 350 carry running back, and they're like, well, 350 carry running backs always bust the next year. Well, in some cases, yeah, but it's in some cases they're getting that number, that amount of work, because they're having a career year, and you know, it's a career year for a reason. It's, you know, something that you can't always match. The one concern that I would have, I mean, nobody in the bullpen has really pitched fantastic this spring. It's granted, it's spring, so there's that caveat. You know, guys like Wade Davis, Aaron Crow, they've been fine. Holland has been pretty good. Herrera's had, you know, some ups and downs. Coleman has got pretty ugly numbers. Bueno's actually got pretty decent numbers. And then guys like Donnie Joseph, who looked like he was going to be in the running, you know, didn't really have a whole lot of success in those last couple outings. So I don't know. I mean, it's pretty easy for a bullpen arm to kind of hit that wall and just kind of, you see it all the time where bullpen guys come in and they come and go, and you know, sometimes it is hard to replicate those kind of results, especially considering that last year they were, you know, if not the best bullpen in baseball, they were top 3, top 5. So I don't know if you can go in with that expectation, but certainly the skill set is there, the track record is there, and I think they're at the very worst going to be as a unit, you know, very good, you know, significantly above average, at least. So I mean, top 10 bullpen. But I don't think you can definitely go out there and say, okay, they're going to be as lights out as they were last year. So it's tough to really say that. But again, a lot of that is just simple regression because they were so good last year. And it's difficult to repeat that when, you know, you're having an exceptional season, because it is, you know, by the definition of the word, it's an exception. But, I, you know, for the most part, most of these guys, I'm not really worried. I mean, Coleman has always been pretty good at every level. Holland's been really good the last few years, even if he wasn't, you know, the, you know, Craig Kimbrell of the AL. Herrera, you know, his second half last year was really good. Season before, he was really good. Collins has been mostly good all the time. And even Bueno's career numbers look really good. You know, it's just he's only pitched about 25 innings in the big leagues, and he's 33. So that's kind of what colors a little bit of the angst out there about, you know, having him at the end of the bullpen.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you for the most part. I don't think they'll be what they are, I think, or what they were. I think 90% of what they were last year is a realistic possibility. You know, 85 is more than reasonable. But I also think that's going to come from, you know, I think Holland is, I'm kind of bullish on him. You know, I think he can repeat what he did, because we saw in 2011 and 2012, you know, continued very good, you know, borderline dominant performances. And then last year he just kind of busted out and was just all over the place. And he even got to a kind of a shaky start last year, and people were,
oh yeah, people were ready to toss him over the edge already. And
I mean, he blew a couple saves and people were like, oh, get him out of there and put Herrera in. And then
he didn't blow a save until May. And then I don't think he blew another one until like mid-September.
Yeah. And then Holland just took control. And then Herrera blew a couple, not saves, but, you know, late inning, eighth inning situations. And all of a sudden people are, get him off the team. You know, he's awful, he stinks, and all this stuff. And yeah, we don't need to go into fan response.
Perspective is a difficult thing on the internet.
Yes, it most definitely is. But I do think Holland can most definitely repeat. I think Herrera will be better than he was last year. But then I do wonder about, when you look at Coleman's numbers and then the relatively small amount of innings that he pitched, you got to wonder how sustainable that is. I mean, his numbers probably aren't going to be as good as they were. It'll kick up. And then Tim Collins, you know, he's had his – he seems to go in stretches. He and Aaron Crow both, it seems, kind of go in stretches almost. Yeah. Where they're just really dominant and they look all-star unhittable. And then they kind of just get hit around a little bit, and it's not really sure why. And then they make some tiny adjustment, and they're back on track. So, you know, I feel like they'll kind of continue that mold and be up and down throughout the season. So, I don't know that it'll be good as good as it was last year, but I do think they'll be very good. And you know, while Santana being lost from the starting rotation does hurt, and we're not exactly sure what we'll be able to depend on at this point from Yordano Ventura on a start-in, start-out basis, you know, how many innings he can give. When you look at Shields, Vargas, and Guthrie, I mean, that's a pretty safe bet that you can get about 200 innings from all of them. So if you can do that, and then you get the 185 to 200 from Ventura, and then maybe, you know, 185-ish from just that five spot, not necessarily Chan or Duffy, but, you know, whoever's in that fifth spot combined, then, you know, then you're looking at a bullpen who's not overworked, and that's going to allow them to be successful late into the season and hopefully, fingers crossed, into the playoffs.
Right.
So I mean, with that, I think we'll take our first break, and then we'll come back on the other side and try and see if we can come up with some answers to some of the lingering questions here as we're a week out from opening day. So we'll take a short break, and then we'll be back on the other side.
We're excited to have an exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Well, have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport.
And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Earlier, we just talked about the pitching situation, where we talked about Danny Duffy getting sent down to the minors, the starting five being pretty much solidified, and the same with the bullpen. And with that, usually the pitching is maybe the biggest question, one of many for the Royals, but this year it's actually, you know, pretty solid for the most part. The questions are, the ones that are there, pretty small. And a month ago, you would have said that, you know, the starting position players were really solid and you felt really comfortable for the first time in a long time about pretty much across the board. You're not necessarily saying that you're going to have elite players at each position, but pretty comfortable, you know. But now we're sitting in a situation where Omar Infante has a shoulder injury, who it's been keeping him out a lot of camp, and he hasn't gotten as much playing time as you would normally get. And they're talking about him not making the upcoming trip to Milwaukee with the team, to where he will be, so he can get more playing time back here or back in Arizona with some of the minor league teams. And Escobar has kind of been in and out. He's had some, I believe his child was born, if that's right. He had some person, is that right?
Yeah, he was in Florida to start camp because his wife was having a child. And then he came back and Infante's shoulder was hurt. And then when Infante was coming back, Escobar's shoulder was hurt. And then when Escobar came back from his shoulder thing, Infante was having, it's an elbow now. It's apparently something that people have always known about. He's got like a bone spur, which is workable, but yeah, I mean, now it's uncanny. It's like every time there's an opportunity for the two of them to be on the field together, it hasn't happened. And I don't think they've been on a field together, you know, playing up the middle. There might have been a game where one of them was, where Infante was DHing. I'm not sure. I mean, it's
kind of important for those two to be together.
Yeah.
That's kind of a relationship you need to have there in terms of on the field, knowing, you know, when there's a ball up the middle, who's going to take it, where's you know, the other person going to be. I mean, with those two players, they need to kind of know that. And with both of them out, I mean, there's a good chance that the Royals start this season with one, or God forbid, both of them not ready to start. So, I mean, Mike, what are the options that the Royals have in terms of middle infield backup depth if Infante or Escobar can't go on opening day?
Well, the good news is Escobar made it back into the lineup the other day, and on Saturday he got three hits and looked pretty good. But you're right. I mean, they need to get some time together, and it's possible that if Infante can't make the trip to Milwaukee, they might just put him on the DL to start the season. Which would require the Royals to find somebody who can play, you know, second base for the first couple weeks of the season. And, you know, it's interesting because the Royals are down to about 30 players in camp still, for as far as guys who haven't been assigned to the minor league camps or optioned to Omaha or Northwest Arkansas or wherever. And, you know, the guys who are still in camp, I mean, Johnny Giovitella is still in camp, second baseman. Jason Donald's still in camp, middle infielder, utility guy. Pedro Siriaco is still in camp, and he's another guy, you know, plays up the middle. And if you look at the guys who have played the most games in spring, you're looking at Siriaco, Valencia, who has played some second base, and Jason Donald, Johnny Diavitella, you know, those guys are all, you know, right up there 20 and 21 games apiece. So it's pretty clear that the Royals are doing everything they can to keep those guys around. You know, the other guy, you know, Carlos Peguero is a guy that I think he's this far into camp because they're going to try to sneak him through waivers. And I believe Ramon Hernandez is the last guy who's still in camp who's not actually on the 40-man at this, you know, at this stage, other than Jason Donald. So you've pretty much got Giovitella, who has an option, can go back to Omaha. So pretty likely that's what's going to happen there. You've got Jason Donald, who is on a minor league deal, so he doesn't have to be you know, retained on the 25-man roster, doesn't have to clear waivers. They can just reassign him. So it looks like, I mean, if it doesn't work out, they might go with Valencia starting at second with Siriaco as a utility guy.
Hey there. I just got my bill, and I see that it includes my FICO credit score. Yep, you get a free...
Sorry about that.
Is that a new sponsor?
Pop-up. Yeah, there's a new sponsor.
I hate autoplay things like that.
Ugh.
It's the worst. It's why do you? I hate that.
There needs to be a universal disable button.
Yeah. Just in your settings, kill all autoplay, and there you go. Because, yeah. Anyway.
Anyway,
back to the baseball.
Baseball. Well, you know, and I had even heard that I think it was Andy McCullough was reporting that there was even a game or so that Mike Moustakas was being tried out at second base. I mean, what's your read on that? I mean, is that kind of just a, we got to try something? Or is that like a, this could be a legit possibility here?
I guess it's just making sure that, you know, if they had to do it in an emergency situation, that he'd be able to go do it. When I first saw that lineup card come out, I think it was put out there as, you know, Valencia was playing at third, and, you know, usually you see the beat writers or whoever is reporting on what the lineup's going to be. You know, they put the scorecard designations on there. So Hosmer's first base, so he's a three, and Valencia has played some third, so he's usually five. And so it almost seemed like they had meant to put Valencia at second, but since he usually plays third, they put it five, and it just seemed like it was a mistake. But no, he actually started and played at second. He got, I think, three, you know, routine grounders there. I don't think you're going to see him playing there, but it might be one of those things where if there's an injury in the middle of the game, that, you know, they might have to go that route. I don't know. I mean, it's not too far off from, like, when last year they had Johnny Giovitella playing at third in the minors, or they had him in the outfield, or even, like, with Eric Hosmer playing, you know, right field in, you know, National League stadiums and whatnot. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but it's not out of the question that he might play there, especially if injuries keep happening and if, you know, other options are ineffective.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of weird, but it just seemed like it was one of those, you know, hey, maybe we can see something here that will lead to some major success, and it can, you know, we can have some options. And it sounds like, by the fact that I believe they only did it once, that they probably came to the conclusion like, well, that was fun, you know, back
right.
So
I don't think it's a Mark Tian thing where he's going to end up there trying to play second.
Yeah.
And plus it's really weird, like, if they were going to do that anyway and they kept Valencia on the roster, why? I mean, they've already put Valencia at second anyway. Moustakas is better at third, so I don't know why flip-flopping around. It's really kind of odd. I guess the only other thing is that Infante has played shortstop in his past, so if it came to something where Escobar was unavailable, they could make that move, but I don't know. I mean, Moustakas was a shortstop in high school, but that doesn't mean anything. So,
yeah, it was at least something to where, hey, we can try this out, but it didn't work. So, you know, back to normal. But I guess it's nice to know that, you know, you absolutely can if you have to, and then you can, you know, that way you don't have to say like, if for whatever reason they are moving Mike Moustakas to second base at some point this season, they can be like, well, you know, we played him there in spring training, and that's totally the Royals, where they would bring up four innings of spring training play and use that as justification for us.
That's reasonable.
You know, yeah, right.
Well, you remember when Miguel Tejada played first base last year for like a game and a half?
Oh, yeah.
He was awful. It's just, I don't know. I don't even remember the circumstances of why they did that.
I don't either, but, you know, we don't have to worry about that anymore.
No,
so.
We don't.
Yeah, but, so, I mean, I guess you could say, I mean, that's a pretty big question to still be unanswered at this point, especially considering the amount of money they spent on Infante in the offseason and how much they have wrapped up in his ability to be above average. So, and the amount of impact that has is made even greater by the fact that we all know across the board, the Royals know it, the front office knows it, you know, all the media knows it, we know it, that this team absolutely has to get off to a really good start. You know, it's not to say that if they get off to a bad start that the season is over, but I mean, based on past history, based on how we know this, how this division has gone the last couple of years, you know, and the way the media and the fan base are in this city with, you know, just past history from the Royals, they need to get off to a really good start, and then things will start to snowball in their direction. You know, if we get off to another, they get off to another 12-game losing streak,
yeah,
start the year, things are going to go bad real quick. They're going to start searching for answers. They're going to start scrambling. Maybe they'll make an unnecessary trade. You know, they just do things that you don't want to be in that position. So,
don't want to put them in position to even have the temptation to make something that might not even be a problem into a bigger problem.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a, you know, it's really important that they get that figured out, or at least get somebody in there who can kind of stem the tide until, you know, Infante comes back. Maybe it's a week, maybe it's two. You know, hopefully they can. At the beginning of the season's kind of slow. They have a lot of days off usually, and they'll get some probably cancellations, you know, rain, maybe snow, who knows. So maybe they can buy some extra time and they can get to the point where it's not a huge deal. But, on the flip side, though, I guess it's kind of nice when you look at that and you say, you know what, that's pretty much the only question that remains, really, because, I mean, yeah. If you were to just go around the diamond and you say Alex Gordon in left field, you know what you're going to get. You know, Lorenzo Cain is a question throughout the season in terms of his ability to stay healthy, but at this point...
He's had a great spring, so...
What's that?
He's had a great spring.
Yeah, and he's fine. He appears to be healthy, and... He said he's kind of worked with the training staff to try and change some things about the way that he plays to try and make himself be able to stay on the field longer. Nori Aoki, I mean, he's a guy who in his time in the big leagues has been pretty consistent. You pretty much know what you're going to get. You go to Hosmer, you know what you're going to get. Escobar, you know, Moustakas, he's – Moustakas, will come back to him for a second, but yeah. Alvarez behind the plate is – obviously, you pretty much know what you're going to get. I still put a little bit of a question mark on Sal Perez because I know he's going to be good. I know he's going to give some offense, but what level of offense? Is his ability to not draw a walk ever going to catch up to him? Not really sure, but defensively, you know what he's going to get. You know he's going to give you something offensively. It's just a matter of how much and when. But the kind of the linchpin in the whole thing might just be Mike Moustakas. As good of a player as Billy Butler for DH, but as good of a player as Billy Butler and Eric Hosmer and Alex Gordon are, and as good of seasons as they might have, you know, a lot of it will depend on if they can get a lot of production from a place they didn't get a lot of production from last year. I mean, what, in your estimation, do you think, I mean, Mike Moustakas has been crushing it in the spring. You know, same thing last year. You know, what... Has he made changes that are maybe repeatable at the major league level when it's not spring training, and that he can finally take that step to being in that same level as Hosmer, or are you just kind of thinking he might be same old, same old?
I think he's still got to come out and do it, but he's having a better spring than he was last year. And the other thing is, you know, he's got 10 walks this spring, which is the only player on the Royals this spring who's got more is Draw Dyson. So that's a pretty good sign. I mean, he struck out 6 times with 10 walks. That is not too bad. You know, and he looks the part. You know, he looks like he has lost some weight. He looks better at the plate. So those things are in line too. So, you know, I think you're just looking at the numbers, it looks good, but everything on the field looks good too. But again, I mean, we've seen it before. You, the way he finished, you know, in 2012, he looked like he was going to be pretty good. 2013, he was just miserable. And then, you know, this spring, you know, here he is, he's hitting everything like crazy again. So, yeah, I mean, he's a pretty important guy. If you look down the lineup, I mean, last year at this time, the Royals were starting with, you know, Jeff Francoeur and Chris Getz, and they were going to be in the opening day lineup, and they're both negative WAR players. This year, there's a potential that none of these guys that the Royals have are going to be negative WAR guys. So that's definite progress. And when you get a guy like Mike Moustakas, who might even be able to finally, you know, reach the expectations or even approach them. You know, I think a lot of people expected him to be breaking Steve Balboni's record, but man, if he just does 25 homers and hits 260 and, you know, gets on base 32% of the time, I think a lot of people will be plenty happy with that, especially considering, I mean, right now he's pretty much batting seventh in the lineup. That's a pretty darn good seventh hitter in your lineup if, you know, granted that includes Infante batting second. Which we'll see how that turns out. But, you know, I think that's the lineup they plan on having is with Moustakas batting seventh, which is, that's pretty darn good. And if he can hit, you know, that protects Sal if you buy into the lineup protection, which a little bit, you know, maybe I don't think significant, but I think it's all right. They can't try to pitch around him as much at least. So, you know, top to bottom, the lineup looks pretty sound as long as, you know, Moustakas does, you know, any kind of reasonable, you know, impression of being an average big league third baseman. So if he can do that, you know, you've got Aoki, who's a good on base guy, Infante, who's a good contact guy, Hosmer, who could be busting out, Billy Butler, who, you know, we all love, Alex Gordon, who hopefully the concussion stuff was the root of his second half problems last year, and it's not, you know, that he's getting older, that he's declining, and he can have a bounce back. Sal, you know, I understand the concern with him because he does have kind of a selection problem. He's kind of like a catcher's version of Vlad Guerrero, likes to swing at the ball, but he does make contact, and he makes good hard contact as well. He's only struck out 5 times and 41 at bats, so that's pretty good. So,
you know, and that's the thing that's always, whenever I start to get down on Perez, that's the one thing that kind of brings me back up. And it's something that, I mean, you can see with his strikeout rate being pretty manageable from a statistical standpoint, but a lot of it is just, you know, we've talked before about how it shouldn't just be all from a computer in terms of, you know, scouting players and so forth, but you know, that's kind of something you see with your eye. When you see him play, he's got really good bat control, he's really strong, and he's got good plate coverage. So, you know, he's the kind of guy who he's going to swing at a lot of stuff out of the zone, but he's going to hit a lot more than normal people do out of the zone as well. So that's always...
And hit it pretty hard, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, whereas if he's swinging in a pitch out of the zone, you know, maybe 50% of the people don't even hit it and he does. And then of those 50%, only, you know, 20% of those can actually hit it hard. You know, he's one of those guys. And so it's kind of a nice ability for him to have to take him from that, oh, this could be a problem, to he's just one of those guys that can get over that hump and get over the fact that he's not going to be a huge on-base guy, but it's going to be okay. Well, I guess I should say he's not going to be a huge walk guy, but it's going to be okay because his ability to kind of muscle out some hits out of pitches that normally most people wouldn't. So, I mean, that has always kind of given me some comfort and makes me feel a little bit better about Perez, and that's only going to get better as he gets older. So, I mean, I think overall the lineup, I'm pretty pleased from an offensive standpoint with how, you know, I regardless, let's take the Infante deal, you know, the 4 years, $40 million, take that out of the equation and just look at this year, you know, I think it was definitely a good move and one that they needed to make, not necessarily meaning they needed to have Infante, but they needed to have somebody. So
yeah,
I like how they, you know, I'm going to give Dayton Moore a compliment and say I like how he's constructed the roster given what he's had. And they still have some other options, you know, some players who can kind of work their way into the conversation, whether it's a Jorge Bonifacio in the outfield, maybe by the second half of the season, being kind of knocking on that door a little bit. It's probably too far away to say somebody like Hunter Dozier can make a move, but he's a college player. I mean, stranger things have happened, so he can move through this system pretty quick. So, you know, there's some options there. And overall, I am more than fine assuming a healthy Infante, you know, with how the Royals go on opening day, how their lineup stacks up. I think it stacks up pretty well to, you know, most of the rosters in the league. And they don't have a Miguel Cabrera or a Mike Trout for sure, but I mean, Eric Hosmer took a step last year, and as good as he was last year, that was not his ceiling, nor was 2011 when he was third place rookie of the year voting. I mean, he can still take another step, and you know, Billy Butler can be better than he was last year, and Alex Gordon can be better than he was the second half of last year, and you know, an offense that was still pretty good last year can be even better. So that's nice. Something that we haven't, I mean, we were kind of saying the same thing last year, but they're in an even better position this year. So it's nice to see that, where not only, you know, last year, 86 wins, they didn't just polish their laurels and say, we're good to go. They came back and said, we need to get even better, recognized it, recognized where, and that's something we've railed on them in the past for, not seeing not only that they need to get better, but where they need to get better. Being able to see that is definitely good, and that they've fixed it. So with that, I think we'll take another break, and then when we come back for our final segment, Mike and I will have a couple bold predictions that we've prepared about this next season for the Royals. So we will see you on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We're here with our final segment. We're going to have a couple bold predictions for you. We already talked about the pitching staff and the how they had that pretty much set with the starting five, excuse me, and the bullpen, and any the last kind of big lingering questions they have, which leads us to looking forward now. We got this season coming up. We're going to have a little bit more of an in-depth season preview for you next week when Troy's back and he can be a part of that conversation. So it might be about a game or two into the season, but we'll still be okay. There'll be plenty of season left to predict. But in terms of outside of a season preview, we just got a couple things that, without looking at the team as a whole, just one bold prediction a piece that we're going to go with and say what's going to happen this year. And I'll go ahead and lead off. And my bold prediction is that Kyle Zimmer will pitch more than 30 innings for this team in 2014. My reasoning for that is I really feel like the Royals, they wanted more out of Zimmer from spring training, and not in terms of his ability, just in terms of how much they wanted to see from him. But he's been injured the most of it. I don't even know if he's thrown off a mound yet, really. He's got a little bit of ways to go in terms of health and getting back to that point. But when he's been healthy so far, especially in the second half of last year, and when he got to AA and made a couple tweaks, especially to his his delivery out of the stretch, he really kind of turned things up and became that pitcher that flashed that stuff where you said, oh man, this can be a front level guy. So that was nice to have that. And then you've got his injury issues, and I thought the Royals were hoping that he could really compete for that fifth spot with Ventura, and I think they were hoping that they didn't even need to do something like sign Bruce Chinn. And then when they, you know, saw the extent of Zimmer's injury and kind of what his recovery would be like, how long it would be, I think that's when they pulled the trigger on signing Bruce Chinn, knowing that, you know, not only with Danny Duffy around, but then with Zimmer probably getting healthier and healthy enough to, not saying he'll be up in the major leagues by June, but probably be healthy enough to be at that level by June, that you would probably have a couple good options if Bruce Chinn started to falter. So I'm going to say that Kyle Zimmer will probably come up second half of next season at some point, or this coming season at some point, and be most likely out of the bullpen. I mean, they've kind of talked about it a lot, and I don't know how much I like him coming out of the bullpen, but if the Royals are in a situation where they've got the rotation set and they just need a kind of lightning arm that people haven't really seen a lot out of the bullpen, I'm all for it. You know, anything that can help this team down the home stretch possibly get into and then have success during the playoffs, definitely. And you look at, I mean, there's been a precedent for this before. You've got, you know, David Price. You knew that was coming.
Yeah, I knew that was coming, yeah.
David Price came up in 2008, you know, in his first year and helped the Rays get to the World Series. Was it, who's a pitcher for the Rangers? Alexi Ogando? Did he, he was a reliever. I mean, he didn't come up late in the season. He was a full reliever for you. Was it him, or am I thinking of another one that the Rangers tried to start after being a reliever for a year or two?
I think it might have been him, because he did start a bit, and you know, it might have even been Feliz would have been another guy that they brought up just to get his arm in there. I don't remember if it was kind of with that same kind of like late season gunslinger thing like with David Price, but
yeah, it was no. He definitely, they both had a season or two under their belt as a reliever before trying to be put in the rotation. But just the point being, you know, it's not unprecedented for somebody to come up as a reliever for a little bit and then make a shift, although a season or two would be a little bit more than a little bit. But, you know, the David Price is probably the best, most recent example of somebody who really came and really helped that team get over the hump down the stretch and then propelled them into the postseason. I'm going to say Kyle Zimmer, if the Royals are in that position, then Kyle Zimmer can and will be that guy. So that is my bold prediction. Mike, what's your bold prediction for the 2014 Royals?
Mine is that, well, we followed for weeks and weeks and weeks the saga of Irvin Santana. You know, last year had a great season, 211 innings, 3.24 ERA, you know, solid, great number two pitcher behind James Shields. The Royals won't miss him this year. That's my bold prediction. And here's where I come up with that. And this is going to be kind of flipping a 180 on a major acquisition of the offseason. Here's where I'm getting this. Because you look at Ervin Santana, great season. So with Wade Davis was just awful in the rotation. 125.1 innings, 79 earned runs allowed. That's 5.67 ERA. If you combine the two, and that's Wade Davis as a starter. That doesn't include his relief appearances. As a duo, they threw 336.1 innings out of the starting rotation, good for 4.15 ERA combined. Now, I've been critical of the Jason Vargas signing, and I can't sit here and say that 4 years, $32 million is still a good signing. I just can't. But looking over his numbers, looking over his career, I don't see it as bad of a deal. And especially this year, in a certain context, it can work out pretty well. Now, I don't think he's going to do what Ervin Santana did, but if you consider the duo of Ervin Santana and Wade Davis, and you take what Jason Vargas has done since 2009, and the caveat on this is that, okay, I'm just cherry-picking his good years, because prior to that, he was pretty bad. But the difference here, I think there is an important turning point, because he missed the entire 2008 season due to hip surgery. He came back, he was, you know, significantly better, and has been fairly league average since. His 162 game average is 209 total innings pitched, 95 earned runs allowed for 4.07 ERA, which is totally acceptable. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to replace what Ervin Santana did, because obviously it can't. You've still got to make up some innings there. But the other thing is, you're going to have Yordano Ventura in the rotation as well. So you're basically taking a lot of what you had last year, James Shields, Jeremy Guthrie, and Bruce Chen, who had significant time last season. And even Danny Duffy, if you want to include him, because he had, you know, some late inning stuff and midseason stuff. So basically, to match the combination of Ervin Santana and Wade Davis, Yordano Ventura could still have a pretty pedestrian 4.25 ERA as a starter in 127 innings. Now, I think he's going to exceed both the innings and the ERA this year. I think he can easily be an under 4 ERA guy. So you could see where the combination of Vargas and Ventura ends up having a better cumulative number and a better impact on run prevention than the combination of Santana and Wade Davis. So that would be my bold prediction, that even though the Royals didn't get Ervin Santana, they still get Vargas, who, you know, if you look at his numbers as well, you know, last year he had one of the best strikeout rates of his career. If you look at how he started his career, he was very much an extreme fly ball guy, you know, giving up, you know, only getting 30% of his 30% ground ball rate. 1 year he was 26.7. But it's been better each of the last few years. It's you know, jumped to 36%, then 40%. So it seems like he's getting more ground balls as well. So if you've got a guy who doesn't walk a ton, is able to strike out more guys, and is getting more ground balls, I think there's some opportunity there. And when you put him on a team like the Royals and in Kauffman Stadium, where you've got a great defense behind him, you've got a stadium that is very tough to hit home runs in compared to other stadiums, I think you could have a pretty good combination there that might work out at least this season to make it so that even though the Royals didn't sign Ervin Santana, it's not going to be as big of a deal as people think.
And to add on to that, you know, it's not just Jason Vargas. It's Jason Vargas plus what we already talked about with the additions of Infante and Aoki. So you've got your Vargas, your Ventura, everything you just said, and then throw the fact that they have those two. Like you said before, the Royals could go into the season with no negative WAR players when they had two last year. So all that combined, you know, I flash back to Moneyball in the movie version. Mm-hmm. Where they say,
where are you going?
What?
I know where you're going.
Okay, where Brad Pitt says, you know, what was Giambi's on base percentage, and what was Damon's, and what you know, who all they missed. They said, okay, well, we don't need Jason Giambi back. We don't need Johnny Damon back. We need their on base percentage back. With, you know, we need to find three players or whatever to fill these holes that can give us this. So all they need to do is average, you know, less than what Giambi's on base percentage was per person, but in total it'll equal the same. So then you have a situation with the Royals where you're losing a lot with Santana, but in total you're actually losing Santana, Getz, Francoeur, Davis, all that badness is gone, bringing in Vargas, Ventura, Aoki, and Infante. So that's the real comparison, and that just adds more credence to your bold prediction. So
there are some holes to it, because as BH and Detmo pointed out, that Vargas has pitched in Safeco and he's pitched in Anaheim, and they're both overall they're less hitter friendly than Kauffman. Overall, the kind of myth is that Kauffman's this pitcher haven, and it's really not, because, you know, even though it's harder to hit homers, it's easier to get other, you know, bloop singles to drop in because it's a big outfield. Gaps are a little bit bigger. So it plays a little more neutral. It's just very friendly if you're a home run prone pitcher, which Vargas is and has been in the past. So that could be one thing. But I think the improved defense kind of balances that out a bit. And, you know, just, you know, the other thing is that you don't know. I mean, he could be on the tail end, and it could just be that he doesn't reach that kind of average that he's had over the last 5 years over, you know, that 162 game extrapolation. So, you know, that could be another thing, but I think overall I think it's got some potential there, and I wouldn't have thought I'd say that a month ago.
Yeah. So there you have it. Bold predictions from Jeff Hur and Michael Engel on what two things that you might be able to make an argument for this season for the Royals. And I mean, ultimately, you know, there's, based on the nature of the Royals and what we've gone through in our lifetimes, and specifically my lifetime, since I'm a little bit younger than you, and literally every year of my life, with the exception of the first 6 months, the Royals have not made the playoffs and or stunk and or been incredibly awful laughingstock of the league. So there's a little bit,
golly,
check that, there's a lot of the wait and see kind of attitude. But that said, I mean, this is, again, we said this last year that it was the most exciting time in a while to be a Royals fan in March, April, but it's exactly true this year. And it's not just a repeat, because last year was good. It's not like 2004 where we say, oh, it's so exciting because last year was a good year. You know, they, not only were they good last year, but they took steps to get even better, to try to get even better, I should say, given the limitations that the Royals have. So even though they get rid of, or they can't hold on to a Santana, you know, they went out there and they tried to fill that hole the best they could, and they filled every hole that they could. So the Royals now, I feel as good about them as I've ever felt about the Royals in my lifetime that I can recall. You know, I'm sure if I was old enough to really have a podcast when I was 4 years old, 89, when the Royals were, you know, winning close to 90 games a year, I might have felt a little bit better. But since I've been able to feel good or bad about the Royals, this is the best I've felt. I mean, do you kind of, having a little bit more of a seasoned, you know, Royals experience, maybe even remembering a few good teams, whereas I don't really, I mean, do you feel the same way, or is this still not quite there yet?
Well, I mean, it's certainly, when you look at what changes they've made, it's not too different from the team from last year. And in some of those cases, they've improved at second base, and they've improved in right field. Even though David Lowe was really good, I don't think anybody would have expected a follow-up season. Some do, but, you know, I don't. And he's actually had some neck problems since he's been traded to Baltimore, so that's another story. But it's a more complete team than I've seen in a long time, you know, top to bottom. Yeah, I mean, I don't like the Vargas signing for the length of the money. And, you know, I'm not super thrilled about the last year, or even last 2 years for the Infante deal. But I like what it means for this year. And I think it's a lot more realistic this year to expect more. Whereas, you know, I remember in you know, 89, that was like right in the peak of when I was starting to watch baseball like all the time and just soaked it up. And oh man, the Royals were one of the best teams in the game, but they, you know, they just ran into a problem that there were only two playoff teams from each league, and they happened to be on the outside looking in. And, you know, that gave a lot of hope. And, you know, 1990, they went out, they signed Mark Davis, the reigning Cy Young Award winner. They were taking both reigning Cy Young Award winners to open the season, which was had never happened, that a team would have both. Brett Sabrehagen won in 89, plus George Brett was still, you know, hitting pretty well. He was obviously in the tail end, but he was still doing well. And in 1990, he won a batting title. Bo Jackson was still around and was an all-star in 1989. Mark Gubazov was there, you know, Tom Gordon. So it seemed like it was going to be something for real, and they weren't very good in 1990. And then you brought up 2004, which, you know, in 2003, obviously, there was, you know, the We Believe and Nosotros Creemos and all that. And, you know, had I known what I know now, I would have been very skeptical of the 2004 team, but they went out, they got Juan Gonzalez and Benito Santiago. And, you know, there was a lot of excitement and a lot of people thought they'd be really good and they were terrible. So those are the two precedents that you've got, where you follow up a very good season with really disappointing one, and then a pretty good season, a promising season with a complete stinker. So I hope the pattern doesn't hold, but I also think that this team is more real than the last one that was in the same position coming off of a winning year. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's the playoffs or not. I think there are still some questions, but, you know, if you get a little bit of variance, some luck here and there, and three or four games swing your way, that's sometimes all you need. And that's what, you hope they can be an actual 86-87 win team, and maybe they get five more wins based off of luck and go on to win 92 in a wild card. So there you go. Maybe that'll happen.
Maybe. You know, and there's been so many times where you've had teams make improbable runs and whatnot, you know, whether it be, you know, the Rays in 08 or whether it be the Cardinals in 06 when they were, you know, barely squeaked into the playoffs and then just ran right through and win the World Series. You know, so there's always been those teams. And to me, it's always the most frustrating, besides just the objectively awful teams the Royals have had in the past. You know, when they've had the more just mediocre teams and not awful, there's always been that kind of, you know, why not us type of a thing, like literally asking that question, you know, why not the Royals? What is it about them that hasn't allowed that success? And, you know, there's lots of reasons, and we've talked about lots of things about how they run their organization and so forth. But, you know, last year kind of showed that this actually can be the, you know, why not us team, because they came out and they won, you know, was it 15, 16 out of 20 games after the All-Star break, and went on that run that you typically only see one or two teams do, you know, in any given year. And you know, they had the second best record in all of Major League Baseball after the All-Star break. So they're finally a team where why not us is a legitimate question, as opposed to the past where it was just wishful thinking.
Right.
That is, again, something that I have not really seen in my lifetime. And that is really awesome to see that. And it may seem like we get kind of down sometimes on this show, but I mean, I can tell you just from the emails we send back and forth and some of the conversations we have on Twitter and everything, I mean, there's some excitement around this team. We would love nothing more than to see some playoff baseball here in Kansas City. I've never seen it, so I would definitely love nothing
right
more than that. All my other teams have flamed out in the playoffs this year. So with the Chiefs having maybe the worst gut punch kick in the balls loss I've ever lived through, and I've lived through a lot.
Right.
And then the obvious disappointment with KU just recently that we don't need to talk about too much, but
it's a rough year. Hopefully
the Royals can buck that trend and be the team that not only why not us, but, you know, let's get a chance. And I don't want to get too deep into it, but I think if the Royals do make the playoffs, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this, but I do think they're a team that's built to have a really, really big run just with the dominance of their bullpen, the way everything, the way their roster is structured. I think they can make a run, but it's a matter of proving it over 162 games and getting to that point. So we'll kind of see how that develops. But Mike, do you have any kind of final thoughts as we wrap up what we've talked about here today?
I really don't. I mean, I'm just excited that in a week we'll be celebrating the first of 162 Royals victories, and, you know, we'll just keep looking for the rest. So pretty exciting to be a week from everything counting for a change.
Yeah, a week away from parade number one, huh?
Right.
All right, so with that, I think we'll leave you. We kind of ran down and talked about the pitching staff and the few lingering questions and gave some bold predictions. So with that, we're going to wrap up this show. And next week, Troy will be returning, and we'll have a kind of season prediction. We don't have any guests planned as of now. Everything's kind of busy with the media types getting ready for the season and all that, and the NCAA tournament going on. So I don't know if we'll have a guest for you, but we'll try and see if we can come up with somebody. If not, though, you'll just have the three of us, which is good enough as far as I'm concerned. And we'll have some good stuff for you as we
send some emails to us at kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com, yes, or hit us up on Twitter at @KCBaseballVault, and check out royalspodcast.com and what other people are saying. And, you know, share your thoughts. We might read some if they're cool and fun and everything. And you know, you can participate in our little season preview as well, just a bit.
Yeah, you know, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know, we have read emails on the air and used them as kind of jumping off points for some topics. So if you're an avid listener to this show, and I know you're out there somewhere, then go ahead and, you know, drop us a line and give us a topic, and if it's something we like, we'll run with it, and we'll obviously give you credit and let you know. So, you know, we want you guys to be a part of this as much as we are, because it's, you know, we're just fans just like everybody else. So this is a fan show. So go ahead and drop us a line. We'll
pull up a bar stool.
Indeed. We'll all get ready for this season together and talk about the excitement to come. So with that, we'll see you next week when Troy will return as your host. But until then, I'm Jeff Herr for Michael Engel, and this is the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and we'll see you next week. Go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.